Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And today we wanted to talk a little bit about the history of smartphones. And before we really get into it, I thought we'd probably dive just a bit into our own personal history with smartphones. Lauren, do you own a smartphone?
I do, in fact, own a smartphone.
Gosh, Lauren, what kind of smartphone do you own?
I have an iPhone 4.
Okay, so iPhone 4, one of the very popular models out there. I actually have an iPhone 4 as well, though I use mine as an iPod Touch because it's a hand-me-down. My wife has an iPhone 5. She loves it. She and Siri have nice long conversations, of which I get to take no part.
Aww.
But I also do have my own legitimate smartphone, legitimate in that it's actually connected to a cellular network, because my iPhone is not. I have an Android phone, an HTC G2 to be precise, which was the successor to the HTC G1. That'll come in handy later. But I was a late adopter to the smartphone model. And iPhone 4, was that your first one?
By late adopter, yes. Do you mean before 2011? Because because that's when I adopted the smartphone
model. Yeah. And as we'll see, that was fairly late considering when smartphones first started to hit the market. But then I was also a late adopter to cell phones in general. I was one of those curmudgeons who said, why would I need a phone so people could get in touch with me whenever? That's what answering machines are for. Get off my lawn. But I thought we'd talk about the history, and also we need to kind of define what a smartphone is in general.
Because that's changed over time a whole bunch. These days I think it's basically defined as something that has apps that you can download so that you can change what software is on your phone personally.
Yeah, exactly.
Very true.
And in the past, that was it was more just kind of a combination of a cell phone and PDA at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. Some basic features that made it more than just a device that could let you call on the go, but let you send messages in various ways or even surf the web. So a lot of the stuff that we would think of as a feature phone was originally what we would call a smartphone.
Right.
Because a feature phone now is pretty much anything that's not a smartphone, apart from, you know, a brick that makes calls. But to really understand how smartphones evolved, well, we started talking about the history of it, and we realized that we kind of had to go a little further back than smartphones or cell phones or telephones.
Because what essentially a smartphone is a telephone that is mobile.
Right.
And what a mobile telephone is technically a radio.
Yeah.
So you go all the way back to, what was it, 1876, that Alexander Graham Bell?
Yeah, that's Alex, as I like to call him. Yeah, he came up with this idea. He called it the electrical speech machine. And in 1876, and before him, there had been a lot of work in physics for discovering things like the nature of electromagnetism and how that could create certain waves. And mm-hmm. There had also been development of a thing called the telegraph, which was
crazy.
I know, nuts, right?
But you can send messages across distance.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't have to use a horse or smoke or a horse that's smoking. It's awesome. So, yeah, the at this point, we're talking about actually transmitting voice over electricity, which was a phenomenal idea. And the nice thing about this is that you're looking at these different disciplines that kind of combined to say, you know, there's probably the potential to make a wireless communication system. We've figured out how to do it by wire. We've got this other work that physicists are doing in electromagnetism and mm-hmm. radio waves. I bet that we can figure out this relationship between electricity, voice, electromagnetism, make it work in some crazy way to transmit voice across great distances without wires. And there were a few people who were thinking of crazy thoughts like that. Marconi, he was one of them.
Kind of big.
Yeah, kind of big. There was the internet darling.
Tesla!
Yeah, yeah. When you say his name, doves fly out of the internet.
Oh.
Yeah, while he did make some amazing discoveries and was a phenomenal physicist in his day, also was a crazy, crazy man.
He is his picture is looking at us from the podcast wall
yes.
right now.
Staring,
I want to point out.
Staring deeply into me and judging me. That might also be why I get a little grouchy with Tesla. Edison, also very important during this time. By the way, that's your cue to boo. You cheer Tesla and you boo Edison. That's how the internet works.
Well, he killed elephants.
He did kill elephants. That's true. He used alternating current to shock elephants to death. But we're kind of getting off base. Anyway, yeah. At this point, we're talking about radio. So now radio, of course, plays an important part because when you get to the point of cellular telephones, you're really talking about another version of radio communication. So you've got the development of the telephone and the development of radio all going on at the same time. And then we'll skip ahead a little bit because although there are lots and lots of things we could talk about during this time, ultimately they don't really inform our discussion about the history of the smartphone. I would go all the way to 1922.
I'm actually not familiar with this particular reference that
Eves Wireless.
Eves Wireless.
Okay, so there's actually a clip online where you can watch this silent film. And I did not know about this until this morning. So don't think that I'm brilliant because I put this in our notes. I just found out about it and I thought it was too cool to pass up because I was looking around and someone jokingly referred to it as the first smartphone. It's a silent film that shows two women walking down the street having a conversation, or at least that's what we assume they're doing because we can't hear them. They could be making bird noises for all I know. They come up to a fire hydrant, and as two women in the early 20th century would do, they stop at the fire hydrant.
Clearly, of course.
They wrap a wire around the end of the fire hydrant.
And
clearly. And the other end of that wire is hooked up to a radio. And then there's another wire from the radio going to an umbrella, which one of the two ladies opens up and holds up into the air. And then they fiddle with some knobs on the radio that is now wired to both the umbrella and
the fire hydrant.
Fire hydrant. And then it cuts with the magic of cinema to a radio operator who is holding up a transmitter to a phonograph. and plays music from the phonograph through the radio transmitter, which the two ladies on the street are apparently listening to.
Via the umbrella, and yes.
Yes, so this was what people were calling the first smartphone, because it was using wireless radio technology to transmit...
communications.
Exactly.
Right.
I like to think of it as the first iPod commercial. But... yeah, that's why I put that in there, because someone jokingly referred to it as the first smartphone, which really, it only had one-way communication. You could only receive. There was not a transmitter.
Right. They didn't have a microphone hooked up to it.
Exactly.
Clearly, that was going to be in the sequel.
Yes. So. Yes. It was Eve's witness to the reckoning.
Electric Boogaloo.
Did not do well at the box office, sadly. But that's why I had to put that in there, just because the clip is online, and I'll share a clip of that in our Facebook page so you guys can get a look at it, because it's entertaining.
It sounds spectacular. If this were not audio, then I would want to play it right now.
Yeah.
No, but we had some actual mobile call technology going on by the 1940s. Is that correct?
That's correct. 1946, you got AT&T and Bell Labs. Now, Bell Labs is the research and development arm of AT&T.
Correct.
And Bell Labs, very much known for developments in wireless communication, as well as just communication technology in general. So in the 1940s, they developed the first wireless network. And that's kind of being generous.
What was it like back in 1946?
So imagine that you are in a big metropolis.
Okay.
And your big metropolis has a wireless network that consists of a single tower with a transmitter on it. And that transmitter is capable of handling, maybe a dozen channels of communication. So that's all it could handle at one time. So in other words, even if you had a lot of people with the handsets...
You could have 12 of them actually operating simultaneously.
Or maybe even just 6, because I don't know if it was two ways.
Oh, if it was two ways, then, yeah.
But I honestly don't know, because I didn't have enough information there. But the first wireless call was made by a truck driver, showing that even back in the 1940s, we were not practicing safe driving techniques. And it was a handset, like a rotary phone handset. Do you know what a rotary phone is, Lauren?
I remember rotary phones from when I was about 3.
Yeah, Lauren's a little younger than I am. So the rotary phone handle, it's this giant handle, right? And it's got like a cord that goes down to the base unit of this wireless telephone.
And how large was the base unit of a wireless telephone?
Well, I don't have the specific dimensions, but I can tell you it weighed 80 pounds. And for our friends who use the metric system, that's 36.3 kilograms. So not exactly fit in your pocket mobile.
Not so much something that you want to take around with you, I'm pretty sure. Vacations. I assume its camera was really crappy.
Yeah, no, terrible. Yeah. A 0-megapixel camera. Right. Yeah, the only app it could run is Call This Person, and that's only if you dialed it. 80 pounds. Yeah, if Steve Jobs had come out in 2007 and unveiled the iPhone and it weighed 80 pounds, I doubt it would have done quite so well on the market.
Yeah, not so much.
But not
for those purposes.
Yeah, and it cost $15 a month to have the service, which if you were to do an inflation calculator, as I did, which had the latest year as 2011, that's the most recent figure
right,
I can get.
Sure.
But in 2011 dollars, the $15 a month would be $138 a month,
which actually isn't so bad. Yeah, that I would take that today.
Yeah, that's actually lower than what I'm paying.
Although I suppose that 80 pounds of lugging equipment around is maybe. I mean,
well, I would also
be
in better shape. I wouldn't need to download any physical fitness apps to my phone, because just carrying the phone would be physical fitness.
Maybe we need to bring back the 80 pound phones.
Maybe this
will solve the obesity crisis. It'll be terrific.
If any of our listeners out there launch a company where you market an 80-pound smartphone, we demand at least some sort of residuals, because we ain't getting rich from podcasting, folks.
Also a prototype. Send one over.
Yeah.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Okay, so moving on, we get to 1947. Yeah. Now, this is where we start seeing companies look into developing cellular networks. So going beyond that single transmitter model I was just talking about, now we're looking at building the foundation that would allow people to make cell calls.
Right. And by cellular, of course, we mean a telephone that can go through a network of towers and keep the signal.
Exactly. Yes, because that would be an issue. If you were to move outside the broadcast range of a transmitter and a receiver, then you would drop your call. So if you have a network of these transmitters and receivers, then theoretically you could move from one to the other and you'd be fine, but you'd have to figure out how to
coordinate.
You got to build the architecture.
Yes.
So that the phone, when it moves from one to the other, gets handed off from one tower to another tower or communication ceases. This
right.
is not a trivial problem. And it will take many decades of work.
And lots of infrastructure goes into it.
Yeah.
And so even though we technically had the capacity to make these calls, to make these mobile calls back mm-hmm. in the 1940s, we would not have the infrastructure to do so. I guess it started in 1947. But
right. Yeah, no, you're exactly right.
Even today, I mean, certain parts of Atlanta we drive through and I'm just like,
you get hit that dead section. There's a section on, and I apologize to all the people who are going to hear the pronunciation of this street, but this is how we say it in Atlanta. Ponce de Leon. When you go down Ponce de Leon,
it's a true fact, folks. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's not Ponce de Leon, which is how my wife pronounces it. Being from Philadelphia, she refuses to say
I'm from
Ponce
Florida.
De Leon.
Yeah, they can't. I'm a little bit physically incapable of saying it. After about 8 years, I worked it out.
It's tough. But yeah, there are certain dead sections. Clearly, we still have to keep building those networks out if we want to have universal coverage across the United States. That sounds weird. Universal coverage across the United States.
Universal.
If it's universal, doesn't it make it international? Anyway, moving on. So we're talking decades of work to build out these cellular networks, which at that time, no one was using because there wasn't enough of networks. Right.
Right. It was physically impossible to.
Kind of crazy.
Yeah. And it wasn't, in fact, until the 1970s that they managed to pull off that first cellular call, wasn't it?
Yeah. Martin Cooper. Okay. So this is a great, great story. Martin Cooper, an executive with Motorola. All right. Mm-hmm. So you imagine this. You head up a research and development facility within Motorola.
Sure.
Okay. You know that you have peers in the industry who are working on cellular networks at the same time that your group is working on them.
Yes.
The big one being Bell Labs of AT&T.
Uh-huh.
You and your team managed to make a cellular network and a phone that will work on that network, and you can make a call to anyone. Who is the first person you call?
My mom. I'm not sure.
Oh, well, Martin Cooper decided to call the head of the research and development team over at Bell Laboratories because the very first cell phone call was a crank call.
That is amazing.
Isn't that phenomenal? How many more cell phone calls would follow in that wake?
Did he ask if his refrigerator was running?
He asked if they had Prince Albert in a can.
Oh, my goodness.
Actually, I don't think he did any of that. But yes, famously, he very cheekily made a phone call to an executive over at Bell Labs, which was kind of tweaking their nose at the same time as having this historic moment. Now, that phone was also a little clunky. It was not 80 pounds, but it was about 1.75 pounds, which is around 0.8 kilograms. And it had a cute nickname. The Brick, which, you know, obviously if I saw a phone marketed as the Brick, I'm just thinking, boy, I got to get my hands on that thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The iBrick. That sounds.
Can I get the lead weight, too? That would be awesome. So but this obviously showed a shift in telephone technology. It would still be quite a few years before cell phones became a common thing in the consumer market. But
Certainly.
We started to see them get adopted.
For advanced users, for business users,
yep.
Probably.
Yep. Those first adopters, those early adopters who like to be on the bleeding edge of technology before it's even proven, they would go out and get one. They were really expensive. They were not very practical.
Right.
But this was the beginning of that trend.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I have here is 1974, and ladies and gentlemen of Greek ancestry, I would like to apologize profusely for what I am about to attempt. Because 1974 was when Theodore, George, and here we go, Periskavakos.
That's my best guess.
Yeah, Periskavakos. It's a Greek name, so obviously I probably have butchered it. But he patented a concept. He submitted the patent in 1972, but in 74 he was granted the patent for a concept for what would be an early smartphone. Now, it wasn't called that at the time.
Of course.
It was called an apparatus for generating and transmitting digital information.
Smartphone is catchier. I see.
Yeah.
I see why that one stuck.
Although I would say, Lauren, you're familiar somewhat with the realm of the steampunk.
A little bit.
I would think that steampunk fans, what they really need to do is just go through and look at patent titles.
Yes.
Because every patent title is really more of a description of what the device does. And if you've ever seen anyone who creates steampunk gadgets, that's almost always what they name their stuff. It's not a simple name. It's a descriptor.
It's as many words as you can possibly fit into a single phrase without losing your breath and falling over.
Yeah, and the word ether has to be in there somewhere.
Well, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
It's the most important part.
Also, don't forget your goggles. That's neither here nor there. Moving on. So
in 74, our friend Teddy.
Yeah, I like that. Yes, Teddy.
Put in this patent and then proceeded to do absolutely nothing with it. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, it kind of just sort of languished because while the concept was there, the technology wasn't really up to task to fulfilling on that promise because the idea was to have this handheld device that could transmit digital information. At the time in 74, a handheld device would not really be able to do that efficiently. We're talking
right.
about.
I mean, we were in 1974. I'm again. You would be more familiar with this because you are ancient. But
I was not born in 74. Thank you. You'd have to wait a year.
But yes. Handheld devices at the time could do not very.
They could do
much
calculating.
That.
You could have a calculator.
Yeah, we had some really good graphics calculators first starting
around the 70s. Yeah, Hewlett Packard had some calculators and IBM a few as well.
But they were more the size of our laptops than
they were closer to that than a slider phone, definitely. And in 1974, you're also talking about this is right at the very bleeding edge of the personal computer era.
Right.
So a smartphone, which in a way is like a a distant cousin of the PC that fits in your hand, clearly it would be unreasonable to think of something like that existing in 74 when the actual PC still
itself was not really a thing yet. Yeah,
you'd have to wait another couple of years for those to become a thing.
But so when did I mean, because one of the ancestors of smartphones had to have been PDAs.
Yes, personal digital assistants.
Which came onto the scene in the early 80s, is that correct?
Yep, 1984. So there's this company called Scion, and that's going to become important in a little bit, too.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Scion created this device called the Organizer. Now, the first Organizer was more of a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
It was part calculator, part database manager, or part like digital note taker.
Okay.
So imagine that you have a watch that also lets you type stuff in it, but you can't do anything else with the stuff. So you could make like...
It just sits in the watch forever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you could delete it eventually. I think they had to use... I don't think it's this one, but there is one PDA I read about where the only way to reformat it was to bathe it in ultraviolet radiation, which, of course, I mean, I have one of those devices at home. So,
well, clearly.
Yeah. The dogs love it. I'm kidding. They hate it. So, the Organizer, all it was a clock and this a way of taking notes, but you couldn't organize it in any other way, really. It was like I could put down your name and your phone number.
Sure.
And then on the next line under, I might put eggs, milk, bread, you know, et cetera. And then on the next line down, I might say, write down what a person's address. And there's no rhyme or reason. Yeah.
Sure. There was no particular operating system.
Right.
Involved in this one.
Just 2 years later, they introduced the Organizer 2, and that one was really the very first PDA. It had a lot more features. It actually allowed you to organize stuff into different categories,
mm-hmm.
and it laid the groundwork for what the PDA would be over the next really the next decade and a half. PDAs, I mean, they technically still exist, but mostly they've been co-opted by smartphones.
Right. It's one of those many things that we have replaced in our pockets with a single device.
We went from 74 to 84. What's our next jump?
I think our next jump is all the way to 94.
Yeah, we'd like to take these in decades, people.
And that was the first time that a PDA and a cell phone really got kind of smooshed together.
Right. Yeah. So, what IBM did, it was IBM, IBM took a PDA and they took a cell phone and they put them in a room together and put on some Barry White music. And about 9 months later, the Simon personal communicator came out, and that's how smartphones are born. Actually, that's mostly a lie, but no, they did come up with a product called the Simon Personal Communicator. And yeah, it was part cell phone, part PDA. So in a way, it's the kind of like the great grandfather of smartphones.
And it could send facsimiles. Is that correct?
Yeah, it could.
And
it could send faxes.
Wasn't that one of the first messages that it sent? I believe during one of their stage shows, they sent a fax from one end of the stage to the other and were like, check us out, yo.
Yeah, which is at that time, that's pretty exciting.
Certainly.
And, you know, It's hard for us to remember now, but remember all those hoax emails or jokes you would get in email, and then later on you would start getting them on things like Facebook.
My very dear grandmother still uses email to send them.
Yeah, so you get those forwards back in the day, which was a Thursday. Remember, we used to send those via fax. They're called fax lore. Fax lore is a type of folklore where the same sort of hoaxes and jokes would get passed around on fax as they do today on email or through social networks. Mm-hmm. And so very important to allow people to pass on that message that Bill Gates will give them lots of money if they forward this message on, which is not true.
Critical, but yeah. And it was relatively tremendously expensive at the time, wasn't the Simon. It cost $1,099 by itself, or right. $899 with a contract.
Yeah.
Because even then, weren't they working with Bell South, I think?
Yeah.
They had teamed up with Bell South to do this, who wasn't entirely sure about this whole cell phone thing quite at that moment, or the smartphone.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was a big risk at that time. And even at that price, they still sold quite a few products. Now, granted, again, these were going to a very specialized market, because not everyone could afford in today's dollars, it'd be nearly more than $1,600 for a phone. Mm-hmm. $1,600 for a phone.
For a phone.
Yeah, but if you...
Which is twice what I would pay for any normal phone out of contract.
That- Now, and of course, I guess we should take this moment to also acknowledge the fact to all of our listeners overseas who are used to buying your phones without any subsidies from your cell phone carrier, we totally understand that you pay more per phone than we do. But we're coming at it from the perspective of people in the United States who sign away 2 years of our lives in order to be able to buy a phone for about $400 cheaper than what it would go for otherwise.
We have to make a blood oath, but it only costs about $200 to get a phone, and somehow it works out.
Yeah, there's usually some sort of weird ceremony involved, but you guys over there don't need to know all about that. We don't want to give away all our secrets.
but so the Simon personal communicator really kind of didn't do well. I don't think.
No, it sold a few thousand, but mm-hmm. It was enough of a niche market,
and it was kind of a prototype. And again, the infrastructure was not prepared to handle something like that. There weren't that many places that you could use it.
Yeah,
and for something that was based on a concept of you can use this anywhere, that wasn't really. Yeah. It was 94, and so I think it was off the market by 95.
Yeah, It was definitely more of a proof of concept. That's how it turned out. It turned out to be more of a proof of concept than it turned out to be a useful product on its own, because of those very things you say. Because, yeah, I mean, if your whole thing is this is mobile, then you better be able to use it.
Mobily?
Yeah. Apart from like, it's mobile as long as you stay within this 4 square foot area of this part of the office that's adjacent to this giant window. That's not terribly useful.
No. But very soon after that, in 96, Palm started.
Yeah, Palm, man. Boy, what a – and we've done an episode about Palm, a couple of episodes about Palm, and including its relationship with other companies. But in 96, that's when it started to really make a name for itself in the personal digital assistant market, and they released the Pilot 1000 and Pilot 5000. And people who owned Palm PDAs – are some of the most passionate technology lovers I know.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I know people who still will talk about either their PDA or their Palm smartphones. Like the Trio owners are like, well, they're like Amiga owners. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that they are really passionate about that product.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And it's easy to see why. I mean, it was very exciting at the time, the level of functionality that they were getting out of a thing that you could put in your pocket and carry around with you and have access to.
All sorts of stuff, man. I mean, you could have all your calendar in there. You could have files. You could even run apps on these things. It was a small, portable, very limited computer.
Yes.
You go just another year, and then you know, there's this company that pops up in 97 called HTC. Now, I'm going to tell you a story here, Lauren. You guys out there, you can listen in if you like. HTC. I had never heard of HTC because I was not into smartphones at all.
Right.
Until my first Android phone.
2009.
Right. So I didn't. That's actually right. It came out in 2008, but I didn't buy mine until 2009. So that's really remarkable that you knew that. Lauren's been stalking me, y'all. Anyway.
I've been listening to your other podcasts. You've talked about this before, Jonathan.
Fair enough. So HTC, I had never heard of them. I didn't realize that they were first founded in 1997. And in fact, they've had a much longer association with smartphones than I was aware. When I saw the G1, I naively thought, oh, this must be like one of their first products because I've never heard of them before. No, that was due to my ignorance, not due to HTC's success in the or lack thereof in the market. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about some of their other products in a bit. So, yeah, HTC pops up on the scene and they become a big name, although not they don't always have a smooth sailing kind of relationship with the market either. HTC's
right.
been having some issues over the last couple of years, in fact.
Most technology companies, I think, are doing a tiny bit of that here and there.
Yeah. But, and you found out the first use of the term smartphone,
yes. That also happened in 1997. It was attached to one of Ericsson's phones called the GS88, a.k.a. the Penelope.
It's not Penelope.
Not Penelope.
Oh, man, I've been saying it wrong all these years.
But yeah, this was basically a concept model. I think only about 200 were ever produced. But yes, that was the first marketing package that had the word smart and phone in conjunction. There was a space between them, so clearly there was a lot of work to be done in the marketing field.
Deleting that space would take 2 years. 2 years of hard work. You thought building that cellular network was tough. Space is big, yo. Getting rid of it, tough. Moving on.
But and this is where the rest of our outline is extremely crunched together. I drew a little picture and had to start making bendy lines going all over the place.
Well, yeah, because up to now we've been jumping. Like we were doing 50-year jumps for a while. Then we got down to 10-year jumps. Now we're doing like two, and pretty soon we've got a whole bunch of stuff happening year by year.
Year by year, month by month.
So, Lauren, it turns out we had a lot to say about the history of smartphones.
We talk a lot.
Yeah, so it turned out to be so long that we're doing something that it's not unusual for tech stuff. We're splitting it into two episodes. So we're going to leave off here, but we'll pick up in our next episode right where we left off. If you guys have topics you would like us to tackle on tech stuff, email us. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com, or contact us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle is techstuffhsw, and Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.